Welcome to the Buckmaster Show for this Thursday. It is the final day of June 2011. Hallelujah! It finally rained in Tucson, Arizona. More than 80 days without a drop of rain, the fourth longest streak in Tucson history, the driest spell. I mean, it's been unbelievable, and finally we got a little rain. Wow. Good. I am Bill Buckmaster, your host for the Buckmaster Show on KVOI AM 1030. It is Southern Arizona's most powerful news talk station, and our simulcast partners, KJAA in Globe and KAPR in Douglas. Of course, we're always on the buckmastershow.com on the World Wide Web. We have live streaming of the show there, along with archiving all of our previous programs, at least over the past couple of weeks. We are live weekdays from noon to 1 p.m. The lineup for today's show includes a leadoff conversation with Arizona wildfire historian Dr. Tom Swetnam. Dr. Swetnam heads the Laboratory for Tree Ring Research at the University of Arizona. You would be surprised what those tree rings can tell us about our climate and fires here in the Southwest. And we will then, at 20 minutes past the hour, talk with Ward 2 Tucson City Council candidate, Republican Jennifer Rawson. At the bottom of the hour, the founder of the nationally acclaimed Basis Schools. What makes that place, these schools, these Basis Schools, so special? Why are they garnering all these awards? We'll find out about that. Then Bruce Wright will be along. Mr. Wright will join us in studio for our CEO interview series presented by Trio. The Buckmaster Show is primarily driven by interviews, but we always encourage our listeners to join in the discussion with their comments and or questions. Call us on the Buckmaster Show live line 790-2040 or outside of the Tucson area. It's a toll-free number, 1-866-725-5467. Well, the fire season, this fire season, has turned out to be perhaps the worst in modern history in Arizona, with two of the five largest wildfires on record in this state happening in just the past 60 days. Dr. Tom Swetnam is a renowned Arizona wildfire historian. He's director of the Laboratory of Tree Ring Research at the University of Arizona. He is also the co-author of a recent study titled The Forest Response to Increasing Aridity and Warmth in the Southwestern United States. Dr. Swetnam joins us now on the Buckmaster Show live line. Tom, how are you?
I'm fine, Bill. How are you?
Well, I'm doing very well, thank you. And I think it's about time. Thank goodness we did get a little rain. But now as we look back over these past 60 days, couple of months, give me some of your perspective on what we have seen here in Arizona.
Well, it is extraordinary. The size of these fires and the speed that they have spread is just quite remarkable. During several days of the big blow-up of the Wallow Fire up on the Mogollon Rim country near Alpine, several days there in a row, we were seeing between 50 and 70,000 acres burning in each day. Now up the big fire in New Mexico near Los Alamos, that fire burned nearly 50,000 acres in one day.
Oh, it's just unheard of.
Yes, it is. People might remember there was a large fire near Los Alamos about a decade ago that burned into Los Alamos and burned quite a few of the homes and businesses there. That fire burned about 50,000 acres in a week. But we've seen that amount of area burning in a single day. So it is extraordinary what we're seeing right now, this combination of really dry conditions, very windy, and fires doing, the behavior of these fires is extraordinary.
So I think we need to go back here and ask a couple of questions. How much of what we have seen in 2011 in Arizona and over in New Mexico has to do with the weather situation? I mean, it's been, I mentioned at the top of the program, the fourth driest spell on record here in Tucson until that little bit of rain this morning. How much is it the weather, and how much is it the fire suppression technology? techniques that the Forest Service has been employing?
Well, that's the million dollar, the many million dollar question. Indeed. The answer is we don't know how much it is one or the other. It's clearly both. But what is primary? What is secondary? It depends. Indeed, the conditions are extraordinary with regards to temperature and drought. We've been seeing over recent years and decades that the temperatures are as warm as they've ever been, according to our thermometer readings in Arizona. And this long dry spell. And it's been very windy. The jet stream, by the way, has been in an unusual position over the last couple of weeks, and that's been directing a lot of wind here. So there's climate, meteorological factors, but then there also are the forest changes in the past management practices where we've been putting fires out. This has resulted in a lot of accumulation of fuels and denser forests. And that clearly is a factor, too, especially in these our ponderosa pine forests here in the Southwest.
It's 12:11 on the Buckmaster Show. Dr. Tom Swetnam, head of the Tree Ring Laboratory at the U of A, is with us. And, Dr. Swetnam, we have a call from Lauren. Go ahead, Lauren. You're with Dr. Swetnam.
Good afternoon. Thank you for taking my call. I just want to make a fast observation. I'm no meteorologist, and I'm no expert, but I have lived here since 59, and I'm not rich enough to leave every summer to go on vacations. And I am somewhat observant. My observation is that our present predicament is part of a very long-term drought, and I'd like to say it goes back 22 years, but we can't ignore the big floods of 93. But other than that, my contention is we've been in a protracted drought for longer than people seem to remember, and this seems to be the culmination of that.
Thank you, Lauren, for the comment, and I think lots of people would agree with you. It is a protracted drought. Just how many years is in question? Go ahead, Dr. Swetnam.
Well, yes, indeed. That is a very good point. I mean, this is a long drought, probably since the 90s, the 1990s. We're over a decade now of generally low precipitation in the Southwest and reduced snowpack. There have been some seasons and years during that period when we've been average or above average, but overall it's been a droughty period. The thing is, though, that we've had long droughts like this before, in fact, longer ones with lack of precipitation and moisture and snowfall. One of them, a gentleman mentioned, he was here since the late 50s, just before that, from the period of the late 40s through about 1956, been a very extreme drought, probably the most extreme drought in terms of lack of moisture here in the Southwest. Very, very major drought caused a lot of ranchers to go bankrupt, and there were fires then. But the fires then were much, much smaller than what we're seeing now, maybe a tenth of the size of the fires that we're seeing now. So something's changed. We're having extreme droughts, lack of moisture, but also warm droughts. This drought is hotter than the 1950s was, as the temperatures are higher than they were in the 1950s. And that's one factor there. So bigger, much bigger fires as a consequence.
Dr. Swetnam, tell me, from what you understand, what is the current thinking from the U.S. Forest Service on some of these mega fires, these giant fires like the Wallow Fire, the one in the Chiricahuas? What are they saying about fire suppression? What is the current policy as you understand it?
Well, it's been in a state of change in the last decade or so. You know, there's been attempts to try to do different management tactics to allow some fires to burn in order to burn up the fuels. Those are generally allowed only when they're in a wilderness area or someplace where you're not going to be threatened to private properties, and the weather conditions are conducive to a lower severity fire. So there's been some attempt to do that, so-called managed fires or prescribed fires, but they're very risky because conditions can change and these fires can escape the areas that they're trying to keep them in and burn up homes. So it's the policy of trying to reduce the fuels by allowing some fires to burn and to do some thinning treatments with chainsaws and equipment to remove the fuels themselves. It's been very spotty and piecemeal because of the risks of using prescribed fire and limited funding actually to do the treatments with with thinning operations with by mechanical means.
It's 12:15 on the Buckmaster Show, 790-2040, 790-2040. If you have a question for Tom Swetnam, Mr. Swetnam is at the University of Arizona. He heads the Tree Ring Laboratory there. Dr. Swetnam also is a well-known, renowned fire historian. He's been checking these things out, and he knows his history because the tree rings tell him lots. And speaking of tree rings, Dr. Swetnam, Tom Beal of the Arizona Daily Star had a piece in the Sunday, I believe it was June 12th, that the UA tree ring research offers hope for a wet monsoon season. Is it understood that wet summers usually follow dry winters, or is that too much of a generalization?
It's probably a bit of an overgeneralization. What I think what the pattern, though, is that he's referring there to, which tends to hold, is that when you're in a so-called La Nina event or La Nina year, this is the opposite of an El Nino event or an El Nino year. And, of course, this relates to the Pacific Ocean, the temperatures in the Pacific Ocean, and how this affects our storm tracks and coming into the southwest. During a La Nina year, which we are in, actually a moderate one that's been developing since last year and through the winter, when you're in a La Nina year, we get less moisture. It's droughtier. So that has held true to form. But during a La Nina year, and the following summer, which we're in now, is usually wetter. So there's usually an increased monsoon effect during La Nina year. So that's the hopeful side of a La Nina, that you'd have an increased monsoon. So far we're a little bit late on the monsoon, and it's not at all clear that we will indeed have an enhanced monsoon this year. Let's hope so.
You know, one thing we have not talked about, and we're quickly running out of time, only a couple of minutes to go, we're talking about certainly the dry, very hot temperatures contributed to the fires. Then there's the whole fire suppression issue. But we haven't talked about those nasty, the bugs, the beetles. And the current issue of Time magazine says now there's a new one that's been introduced in the Midwest that is eating a lot of the hardwood forest there. So these pests are a problem.
Indeed, in our paper, recent paper that you referred to, that was in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences last December, we tallied up the amount of area affected in Arizona and New Mexico by a combination of fire and bark beetle killed trees and woodlands. And the bad number there especially was in the forests, were up to about 20%, 18 to 20%. Of the forest area, just in a 20-year period, have suffered extreme mortality from fires or bark beetles. So this is a factor, and probably the bark beetles, too, are providing fuels. It's a very complex situation of how the forest changes with bark beetles, and whether that is driving our fire activity now, we're not so sure, but both of them together result in a lot of dieback of our forests and woodlands.
Is anything being done to try to get rid of these bark beetles?
There's really very little that one can do about them. They're mostly native species, those ones we're talking about in the West. They're native species. They're just exploding over larger and larger areas. It's not clear, that forest treatments reducing the densities might have some help. If you help the trees become more vigorous, they can resist the bark beetle. So that's one positive. So some of the same things that we would do to reduce fire risk, like removing the fuels, opening up some of these forests by cutting small trees, might also help with the beetle problem.
Dr. Tom Swetnam, always a pleasure talking with you. Very knowledgeable in this area, and we really appreciate your participation on the Buckmaster Show. Have a great afternoon,
okay.
Tom.
Thank you, Bill.
Thanks a lot.
Right.
Coming up now on 12:19, we're going to talk some politics next on the Buckmaster Show with a city council candidate. Stay with us on this Thursday, the final day of June.
For more than 40 years, Pima Community College has helped our citizens realize their dreams, prepare for meaningful employment, improve their quality of life, and create a better community. We haven't done it alone. Your continuing investment in and support of education has made it possible for us to prepare hundreds of thousands of Southern Arizonans for jobs. Today's Pima Community College students will be tomorrow's firefighters, nurses, police officers, teachers, and small business owners, the backbone of a literate, prosperous, thriving Tucson and Pima County. During these extraordinarily tough times, our funding is in serious jeopardy. And as budgets get even tighter, we'll have to cut back services just when people need us the most. So please support us in our ongoing effort to build a better tomorrow. Help us provide the education and resources that the people of Pima County need today. For more information, contact us at 206-4500 or visit us on the web at pima.edu. Pima Community College, developing our community through learning.
Biro Amore presents Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan pizza using fresh, homemade mozzarella and the finest quality toppings. Taste pizza as it was meant to be at Biro Amore. Casual yet upscale dining with an extensive boutique wine list. Biro Amore in Tucson on North Swan at Camp Lowell, Dove Mountain in Marana, and on the web at viroamorepizza.com. And now in Oro Valley, Noble Hops, the Tucson area's first gastro pub.
From antique to contemporary, Persia to Pakistan, Tibet to Turkey, Karimi Oriental Rugs brings the world to Tucson at the corner of East Fort Lowell and Dodge. Owner-operator Amir Karimi personally selects the world's finest exquisite hand-woven rugs. Sale, purchase, wash, repair, restore, and appraise. East Fort Lowell and Dodge for Karimi Oriental Rugs and KarimiOrientalRugs.com.
The RTA, delivering our promise to you during the past 5 years, completing over 400 projects, including 5 major roadways and the launch of Sun Express and Sun Shuttle Transit Service. With 30 projects under construction, including Tanque Verde Road and the Catalina Highway to Houghton and the bus pullout at Ina and Oracle, please watch for workers and obey all traffic signs. Your tax dollars create jobs and make travel in our region faster and safer. The RTA, delivering our promise to you.
Listed on the National Register of Historic Places and founded by Isabella Greenway, Arizona's first congresswoman, the Arizona Inn is still the standard bearer for luxury hospitality in Midtown Tucson, just minutes from the University of Arizona. Founded in 1930, the Arizona Inn continues to win top honors for hospitality and dining. Travel and Leisure magazine names the Arizona Inn one of the top 500 hotels in the world for 2011. And the Arizona Inn is proud of its AAA four diamond status for both the hotel and dining room. Whether it's for breakfast, lunch, or dinner, or a private event, you can count on Chef Allison's featured seasonal culinary creations to please. The Arizona Inn, a special oasis of hospitality in Midtown Tucson, 2200 East Elm, and on the web at arizonainn.com.
Well, 23, this is the Buckmaster Show, and I am Bill Buckmaster with you on this final day of June 2011, and we have the pleasure now of welcoming to the Buckmaster Show Ward 2, Tucson City Council candidate. She is a Republican, Jennifer Rawson. Jennifer, thanks for being with us.
Thank you so much for inviting me.
So tell our listeners a little bit about yourself and why you decided to get into politics.
Well, it wasn't a plan, but there was a call that went out in February that, in fact, we did not, the GOP did not have any candidates. Well, I thought, certainly, now that they have made the appeal, there will be a large group of people who will go down and be willing to stand up to help Tucson. And I got down there and I said, I would like to help whoever is going to be the Ward 2 candidate. Said, we don't have one.
So you thought there would be people standing in line to run for office.
Well, the need is the call.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, there is a large need in Tucson for new talent to take the town in a new direction.
I want to point out that our number is 790-2040. Jennifer would be delighted to take any calls that come into the Buckmaster Show. So now you are into this race. You are running as a Republican against the Democrat and the incumbent, Mr. Cunningham. What is there something about Mr. Cunningham that he has done wrong, or do you just think you can bring some new experience to this to that ward?
Mr. Cunningham is a very nice young man. The problem is that Mr. Cunningham does not have the life experiences necessary or the budgeting experiences necessary to understand how to run Tucson.
How would you like to see Tucson run? Let's talk about some of your issues.
My issues, of course, are that the citizens of Tucson, regardless of whether they are a Republican or whether they are a Democrat, need four things. One of them, all of us need a job. Number two, we all need the safety of police officers and fire officers, and we need roads that don't rip our cars up. So those four items are things that I think we have been denied, or we have not taken advantage of the opportunities to bring those things to Tucson in the last 10 years with the present control of council. For me, the definition of insanity is to continue to do what you've always done and think you're going to get a different result. We have had the same control for the last 10 years, and it's time now, and it really is an urgent time now for us to change the direction of Tucson, to bring jobs, to ensure the core services of fire and police, and do something about the infrastructure and transportation of our roads.
You know, when it comes to the roads and the potholes, everyone has their favorite pothole. It's, I don't know if it's favorite, the one they usually curse at the most on whatever route they perhaps take to work or go home. The city will tell you they just do not have the money, Jennifer, to fill those potholes.
By the same token, they are subsidizing SunTrans to the tune of an additional $9 million. Steve Kasachik actually, Mr. Cunningham said, well, we need $1.1 million for roads. Steve Kasachik the next looked into the budget and found that, in fact, some of the monies from SunTan could be taken, could be set aside for actual road repair for all of the citizens of Tucson. And per normal, even though Mr. Cunningham had said that he would like that, and Steve found it for him and offered it to him, Steve can't get a second.
Let's hear Jennifer from Laura, who is going to be ready here, and she is ready now to calling the Buckmaster Show. Laura would like to ask you a question about bringing jobs to Tucson. Go ahead, Laura. You're on with Jennifer Rawson.
Hi, Jennifer. Hey, my question is, we hear that a lot. We need jobs, but what exactly is your plan to bring jobs to Tucson?
We have four areas that, in fact, we compete against cities of our size. We compete with cities throughout Arizona. And what would bring jobs to Tucson is the same thing that causes jobs to leave Tucson and go other places. We need tax reform. Instead of increasing taxes, we have to either level them off or decrease taxes. We have to do something about the regulations. We have a double-sized telephone book full of regulations that keep people from being able to start jobs or developments here. Fees, we in the last 2 months have, instead of having the fees decreased, we have three new fees. And whether it is the truth or not, the perceived is the truth. So the perceived is that we are anti-job, that we are anti-business, that we are not a business-friendly community. So we have to reach out and be sure that we change that perception. I've talked with Mr. Duarte, and he's an extremely helpful man, explained to me how these codes came to be. We just need some leadership and some honest-to-goodness hard work to turn Tucson around, and we need to do it now.
We've only got about less than a minute. You're going door-to-door, I assume, knocking on lots of doors.
I am knocking on lots of doors. I am also trying to get into the new area of media, all of my cards and all of my signs will have what's called an RQ code. And if you take your smartphone and point it at that RQ code, it goes right to my website. I am talking to all kinds of groups. Anyone out there who would like to have a meeting with Jennifer, please feel free to call. Our website is rawsonforcouncil.com. And the Rawson is spelled R-A-W-S-O-N, like uncooked son.
And I understand you were a pretty darn good chef in your day, Jennifer.
Well, I'm a pretty darn good chef now.
In your day is today. Thank
That's
you.
That's right.
Jennifer Rawson, thanks for being with us on the Buckmaster Show. Have a great afternoon.
Thank you so much for having me.
Okay, coming up on the bottom of the hour on the Buckmaster Show, we're going to be talking about education and the renowned basis schools next. Stay with us.
Washington. Lawyers for Casey Anthony have rested their case without any testimony from Anthony herself. Budget talks aimed at avoiding a wide-ranging state government shutdown have resumed in Minnesota against the backdrop of a midnight deadline. A federal judge in Boston has granted a bid by prosecutors to dismiss a 1994 racketeering indictment against former mob boss Whitey Bulger so they can focus on a later indictment charging him with involvement in 19 murders. Prince William and his wife Kate have now arrived in Canada on their first official overseas trip since their wedding. On Wall Street, heading into the final half hour of today's trading, the Dow is up about 137 points, the NASDAQ ahead 32, the S&P 500 index trading 12 points higher. More details at srnnews.com.
A simple solution to foot and lower back problems could be a top-quality, custom-made foot orthotic created by Bob Novak. A certified pet orthist, Bob is the best in Southern Arizona in the creation of the right foot support that your body needs and at a price you can afford. Please give Bob Novak a call, 795-2553, or visit him at Arizona Limb and Brace, Rosemont and Fifth Street. Your feet will thank you every day.
The Arizona Inn is the only Tucson hotel named by Travel and Leisure magazine as one of the top 500 hotels in the world for 2011. Located in Midtown, close to the University of Arizona, the Arizona Inn is located at 2200 East Elm Street and on the web at arizonainn.com. The Arizona Inn maintains AAA Four Diamond status for both the hotel and dining room, with Chef Allison serving up breakfast, lunch, and dinner daily, with a featured menu and seasonal favorites. And because the Arizona Inn is listed on the National Register of Historic Places, founded by Arizona's first Congresswoman, Isabella Greenway, the Arizona Inn provides an historic backdrop for your next special event. Arizona Inn is the perfect setting for weddings, anniversary celebrations, or your next business meeting, and you can make your reservations online at arizonainn.com. The Arizona Inn, luxury and elegance in the heart of Tucson.
Hi, I'm Mark Sublett, owner of Medicine Man Gallery, and I'd like to invite you to come visit me. Medicine Man Gallery is located at 7000 East Tinka Verde, at the southwest corner of Tinka Verde and Sabino Canyon, and online at medicinemangallery.com. With 12,000 square feet of exhibit space, we have a wide array of American paintings, antique Indian art, and contemporary modern art by some of the masters of the West, including Ed Mell, John Moyers, and Maynard Dixon. If you have old Indian art or American paintings you'd like to sell or consign, call me for a free evaluation, as we're always looking to add to our collection. If you can't visit us on Tanca Verde, then visit us online. We have over 6,000 objects to view at medicinemangallery.com. So come visit me, Mark Sublett, at Medicine Man Gallery, on the corner of Tanca Verde and Sabino Canyon, where there's always something new to see.
12:34. This is the Buckmaster Show, and I am Bill Buckmaster on KVOI, Southern Arizona's most powerful news talk station, and our partner stations up in Globe and in Douglas. Well, twice within a month, Tucson's Basis Charter School has been ranked among the top schools in the United States by two surveys. Newsweek magazine recently ranking number three Basis among America's best high schools. And last month, the Washington Post's High School Challenge poll ranked at number four. Basis has been a top 10 school in Newsweek's ranking since 2006 and did so again this year despite a change in methodology. We want to welcome to the Buckmaster Show on the live line right now Michael Block. Dr. Block serves as the chairman of Basis School Boards. He's the co-founder of Basis Scottsdale and Basis Tucson Schools. He is the co-CEO of Basis Educational Group, an educational management organization for Basis Schools Incorporated. Prior to his involvement with Basis, Dr. Block was a professor of economics, professor of law, and director of the Office of Economic Education at the University of Arizona. Dr. Block, thanks for joining us on the Buckmaster Show.
It's a pleasure to be with you.
Tell us a bit about how Basis came about. What was the inception of it, and what was the genesis of it?
Well, there's a good dose of serendipity. I married Olga Block, also the co-founder of Basis Schools, about 15 years ago, and she brought to Arizona her middle school-age daughter and enrolled her first in a Scottsdale school and then in the Tucson middle school, and was, let us say, underwhelmed by the content in American middle schools, but very interested in the presentation and in the freedom of the classroom. And so she had an idea that maybe we could use the charter law to create some blend of American and European school standards. And I had been teaching at the university for more years than I'd like to remember. And it was very frequently true that the visiting students from European schools and Asian schools were always at the top of my undergraduate classes. They were just better prepared than even the best of the local students that I had. That their preparation was deeper. So there was a sort of convergence, and in 1998, we opened Basis Tucson with 56 students in a really very precarious state, renting space at Temple Emmanuel, we found over the summer, and began operating there with the idea of creating this extremely high-standard school. Was really just a concept in the beginning, and in the first several years, we tried several approaches and eventually evolved into this approach that we use today, which mimics the systems used in the best educational environments in the world. So we use the AP tests at the top of the pyramid and use those really as qualification tests like the rest of the world does. That is, they're used to have the students demonstrate subject mastery. They have to demonstrate that mastery in a number of areas before they get a degree. And that's really what happens in the rest of the world. So we really mimic that. But we didn't start out to do that. We just evolved it more or less independently.
Dr. Michael Block is with us. He's the chair of the renowned Basis Schools in Tucson. Our number is 790-2040, 790-2040, if you have a question for Dr. Block. Now, you said that the school started off here in Tucson with 56 students. Give us an overview of what Basis, how many students are involved, and your locations. I know you're in Scottsdale, you're in Tucson, now in Oro Valley. Is that correct?
Correct. Last year, we operated schools in Tucson, Oro Valley, and Scottsdale. Next year, we'll be operating schools in addition to that in Peoria and Chandler and Flagstaff. So next year, there'll be three schools in the Phoenix metropolitan area, two in the Tucson metropolitan area, and one in Flagstaff, six in all. And enrollment projections are something like 3,500, 3,600 for total students. Even last year when we had three schools, we were at about 1,800, which is, you know, decent multiple of the original 60 or so that we started with.
Dr. Block, what is the student-teacher ratio? And talk a little bit about finances how do students, do many of them come on scholarship, or is cost a factor? What about that?
Well, it's a charter school.
Yeah.
So there is no charge at all.
No charge.
No charge at all. We do try to we have a fundraising program, and we try to raise some funds for extra salary bonuses for teachers, but it's all outside. It's all voluntary. There's no charge for the educational program, just extracurriculars.
So it must be difficult to get in. I would think there would be a lot of competition of students wanting to get in, so the acceptance process.
It's just a lottery at fifth grade, sometimes sixth grade. The entry grades are really fifth and sixth grade, and it's hard to enter bases above, say, the sixth grade, even the sixth grade, because it's an accelerated school. So by the time we're in seventh grade, the students are predominantly, in fact, the minimum standard in seventh grade is Algebra 1, which is higher than the surrounding schools. So it's hard for us to accept lateral transfers. Most of the entry is at the bottom, and there is a lottery at the bottom.
And the teacher-student ratio, how does that look?
Ours is a little bit lower than the traditional public, but not much. I think Newsweek had us, the recent Newsweek, I think, put us at 12 or 13, but we're always figuring something around 16 students per teacher, which is what the public schools are.
I want to ask you about this piece in the Arizona Daily Star. Charter schools are offering millions of dollars for closed TUSD buildings. Basis apparently is looking at a couple of those sites, the former Duffy Elementary School site on East 5th Street and Fort Lowell Elementary School on East Pima Street. Are those a couple of attractive locations for you?
They are. I mean, they're sort of close to where our existing buildings are, and this is not an extra school. We have really not very good quality buildings at the moment. We have this great school known all over the country, and it's kind of in very, very modest surroundings and very modest buildings. So we're trying to, you know, improve that somewhat. And again, we'd have to finance this out of the current revenues. It's not easy to do, but I think we probably, if we could get the right price on this, and sell our existing buildings. Now, it was a conditional offer. We have to find financing, which really means we have to sell the buildings we have. So,
what is your percentage of students who go on to a university or our college?
100% are accepted at four-year schools.
That's got to be one of the highest in the country.
It is, but most of these top 100 Newsweek schools are pretty high. The top 10, I think, all are in the high 90s or 100%, because most of these highly ranked schools are, you know, college prep schools.
So what's the future of BASIS? Do you expand to other states? Do you keep it in Arizona? Or what are you looking at as your expansion of BASIS?
Expanding both inside the state and out of state, trying to move to locations that where BASIS can operate. BASIS cannot operate in every state. We need a good deal of freedom to operate in terms of we need to have the ability to use highly qualified teachers, not necessarily certified teachers. And there are not that many states which will permit that. And then we need to be our own district and not be part of another traditional school district, because our curriculum and our procedures are different. So there are five or six states around the country, the District of Columbia, that we might expand into, and we're looking, but it would be an expansion both in Arizona and outside.
Dr. Michael Block, congratulations on the latest rankings, continuing on with this tradition of excellence that you have developed over there at BASIS Tucson and up in Scottsdale as well. Congratulations to you.
Thank you very much.
Dr. Michael Block has been our guest on the Buckmaster Show as we come up now on 1244. Our CEO interview series presented by Trio is coming up next. Bruce Wright will be with us. Stay with us.
Taste pizza as it was meant to be at Vero More, Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan pizza, topped with the finest, freshest quality ingredients. Enjoy casual yet upscale dining while sampling our extensive boutique wine list. Vero More in Tucson at North Swan and Camp Lowell, Dove Mountain and Marana, and on the web at veromorepizza.com. And now open in Oro Valley, Noble Hops, the Tucson area's first gastro pub.
Let Karimi Oriental Rugs keep your valuable area rugs looking like new with Tucson's finest cleaning, repair, and restoration services. Karimi specializes in restoring antique, silk, and Navajo rugs with 100% satisfaction guarantee. Karimi Oriental Rugs appraises and purchases quality rugs and offers a vast selection of hand-woven rugs from around the world. Be sure to stop by Karimi Oriental Rugs at Fort Lowell and Dodge or on the web at KarimiOrientalRugs.com.
For 5 years, the RTA has been delivering our promise to you, finishing over 400 projects, including 5 major roadways, with 30 projects underway, including River Road to Ruthroth along La Cholla and the Star Pass Mission Road intersection. Please use caution in the area and obey all traffic signs. The RTA has also implemented transit services like Sun Express and Sun Shuttle. Your tax dollars create jobs and make travel in our region faster and safer. The RTA, delivering our promise to you.
Hi, I'm Mark Sublett, owner of Medicine Man Gallery, and I'd like to invite you to come visit me. Medicine Man Gallery is located at 7000 East Tinca Verde, at the southwest corner of Tinca Verde and Savino Canyon, and online at medicinemangallery.com. With 12,000 square feet of exhibit space, we have a wide array of American paintings, antique Indian art, and contemporary modern art by some of the masters of the West, including Ed Mell, John Moyers, and Maynard Dixon. If you have old Indian art or American paintings you'd like to sell or consign, call me for a free evaluation, as we're always looking to add to our collection. If you can't visit us on Tinca Verde, then visit us online. We have over 6,000 objects to view at medicinemangallery.com. So come visit me, Mark Sublett, at Medicine Man Gallery, on the corner of Tinca Verde and Sabino Canyon, where there's always something new to see.
Coming up now on 1247 on the Buckmaster Show. Every few weeks here on the Buckmaster Show, at least once or twice a month, we introduce you to a leader of some of Tucson's largest companies and organizations. The CEO interview series on the Buckmaster Show is presented by Trio, offering programs and services to support the attraction and expansion of companies that offer primary high-wage jobs to our citizens. Since 2005, Trio has facilitated the relocation and or expansion of nearly 40 companies in the Tucson region, representing nearly 11,000 jobs and a $2 billion economic impact. For more information, visit trioaz.org. Today we're going to be talking with Bruce Wright. Mr. Wright is Associate Vice President for University Research Parks at the University of Arizona. Bruce Wright is responsible for directing the UA Research Parks, which include the UA Science and Technology Park, and most recently, the Arizona Bioscience Park, known as UA Biopark. He's also the founder and president of the Arizona Center for Innovation. It's a high-tech business incubator. The one-time chief of staff to the late Congressman Morris K. Udall, Bruce Wright specializes in regional economic development, international trade, and business development and technology development and commercialization. Bruce Wright, it's good to see you. We've known each other a long time, and And when it comes to creation of jobs, that's kind of been, I think, what your career is all about, isn't it?
I'm glad to be here. Thanks for having me. Yeah, I think at least for the last 20 years, I've been focused on job creation, particularly high technology job creation here in Southern Arizona.
And I think the University of Arizona, which prides itself on being a research institution, a top 20 research institution, I remember the early days of the formation of the U of A Science and Technology Park. What was the thinking of why the UA needed a park like that?
Well, really two things. Partly, we had tried to an ill-fated effort to create a new liberal arts college, and it was going to be vested out at the Tech Park as its location. But the primary reason was that the sense that the university as a land-grant university had a responsibility to try to help translate the inventions, the discoveries, the new ideas that were coming out of our faculty and students into products and services that could be vested in companies either new or existing, and then bring those products to the marketplace to benefit the people of Arizona.
Give us an overview for those that may not be familiar about the location of the U of A Science and Tech Park, and we'll get to the other new element in the biotech park. But overall, where is the park? What is your current status at the park?
The park is located between Kolb Roads and Rita Road along Interstate 10. So it's in the southeastern part of the Tucson region. The park was originally developed by the IBM Corporation back in the late 1970s as a home for their storage systems division, and then they decided to change their business model and put the park on the market, and the university was able to acquire the park from IBM. It's a large place. It's three times the size of main campus. It's about 1,350 acres. We have 50 companies there. More than 7,000 people work at the park every day.
It's a huge employer in the area, isn't it?
It is, and that it serves as the basis of about 12,000 people that work right along Rita Road. So it's one of the major employment centers. I mean, we have big companies like IBM, Raytheon, Canon, and Citi at the park, along with small, medium-sized companies. And the annual contribution is huge. It's $3 billion a year in economic impact here in the region.
And the park, many universities across the country have research parks. I think Stanford University maybe was one of the best known, one of the early ones up there on 280, off 280 in the Bay Area. But the U of A has been ranked very high in the past. What's your current ranking now in high-tech research parks?
We're probably certainly ranked among the top 10 in the country. I think we'd probably be viewed as, you know, the sixth or seventh top park in the country. That's not just in terms of size and number of employees, but also the kinds of programming we're doing and the kinds of technology development activities we're engaged in.
I want to talk about now the new piece of the puzzle. This is the biopark, the new biopark. Where is that right now?
Well, the park is located at 36th Street and Kino Parkway. So it's just off Interstate 10. People may be familiar with the new Costco store that's come online. It's part of that mixed-use development known as the Bridges. We've been working at it for about 5 years. We've just completed all the infrastructure improvements, roads, water, sewer, telecommunications, so on. So the park's development ready. So now we're in the process of starting to go vertical to build some buildings on site and to bring the kind of bioscience enterprises that the park anticipated. It really grew out of a report that came out of the Flynn Foundation. It was done by a group called the Battelle Institute, which said that we lacked the sufficient commercial space for the emerging bioscience industry here in Southern Arizona. So the university felt that given its role in developing research parks, could bring those kinds of facilities online and link them to the very substantial life sciences research that's being done at the university.
So that's a multi-use site. You mentioned Costco, and there'll be housing in there.
That's
as
correct.
Well.
Yeah. It's a 350-acre site. It includes about 110 acres of retail development over time. So it'll be a major shopping center. It includes about 175 acres of residential development of all kinds, and then 65 acres for the biopark. And the concept is sort of to develop a technology community, a place where people can live, learn, work, and play right at that location. But I also think it's going to be transformational for that part of town because it's going to create some really high quality, high wage employment for a town that badly, a part of town that badly needs it.
I know Councilman and Vice Mayor Fimbres was very instrumental in getting that Costco over there, and he's been a huge supporter, saying all along, "Listen, there is economic development. You build it, folks will come." And I think the numbers have just been astounding at that particular Costco.
It leads the nation right now in sales and in new memberships, and. You know, been a lot of doubters about what we've been trying to do about there. You said, well, is this the right place in town to do it? But I think what it's showing is it's a highly underserved part of Tucson. It's so strategically located. I mean, it's just south of the university, close to downtown, on the way to the airport, on the interstate. So we think there's a great future for it, and it allows the university to also to play a role in the redevelopment or revitalization of the very historic neighborhoods that surround the park.
So the two, the new biopark and the existing tech park, how will the roles obviously will be different.
So we're really focusing out at the tech park on three or four areas. We've got a big, huge initiative in solar research and development that we're doing in partnership with Tucson Electric Power. We will shortly be the largest multi-technology, multi-demonstration site for solar energy in the world. 220 acres of demonstrating different kinds of solar technology. We're also focused on developing border security technology at the tech park and aerospace and defense. The biopark will be more focused on biotechnology, life sciences, medical device development, drug development, healthcare, and those kinds of things. And that'll be its focus. It'll allow any kind of technology company that wants to come in and affiliate with the university to be part of the park, but that's really the intention.
So I think the jobs, everyone talks about what we need in this community are jobs, and certainly you've been hearing that for many, many years. Yeah. I think with the you said there were 7,000 employees there, and at the new biopark, how many employees could possibly be at that particular?
Well, a full build-out, 10,000 to 12,000 people could be working on site. And I think what's important to note about the jobs too is that these are high-wage jobs. So, just as a tech park as an example, the average wage is about $86,000 a year. That's more than twice the Pima County average. You know, part of our role as a university is to create job and employment opportunities for our graduates, to keep our best and brightest here in the community. So we're offering high-quality jobs to those young people, and I think that's a really important part of our community. The other part is to diversify our community. We've been traditionally very dependent upon government and education and military bases and retirement. This brings some jobs and some employment into the community that creates products that are exported around the world and bring new dollars into our community, which is what economic development is all about.
How do you think TRIO is doing right now? You serve on the board. Are they on the right path with the economic development?
I think they are. I mean, they're coming out of a very tough recession, but I think they've stayed focused. They've embraced the key areas where we have world-class competency, and I think they are beginning to really attract some companies into the region. The whole effort up in Oro Valley around biosciences that they were very instrumental in dealing with, I think, is a good testimony to their success and the focus of TRIO.
You mentioned, I think, there were how many companies? Did you say 50 out at the tech park?
And yeah, there are 50.
Do you have any room for growth out there?
We do. We have still 1,000 acres of land. Well, actually now about 600 acres since the solar development. But, yeah, we have plenty of room. We're having great success. We've attracted 4 new companies, international companies, this last month. We made a trip to Israel to look at high technology companies. 3 companies are coming from Israel. We have a company coming from Canada. So we see great opportunity to bring new high-tech companies into the community. We've been averaging about 300 new jobs a year out at the tech park. Even during this recession, that's continued. So we've seen strong growth.
So there is room to grow. You could build out some of the park.
We could. We actually could double the size of the park in terms of companies and employment.
But you're going to have to – a lot will depend on how the economy is doing.
It will, but you know, it's interesting. The high-tech sector seems to be the first to be rebounding under this economy. So we're hopeful that we'll be able to do that. There's such inventive people at the university creating these new ideas, these new discoveries. And our ability to capture those and develop them here and keep them here in southern Arizona rather than going to the Bay Area or to Austin or someplace else for development, I think holds a good future for this community.
Bruce Wright has been talking with us on the Buckmaster Show. We're talking about the new biopark. We're talking about the existing high-tech park, both facilities offering jobs to Tucsonans. And as Bruce points out, these are high-paying jobs. So you're pretty much it sounds like you're very optimistic about the future.
I am. I think my main concern is about our educational system and our ability to have skilled workers to meet the needs of these companies. One of the exciting projects we're doing at the biopark is a thing called Esteem High School. It's a science, technology, mathematics high school that will be focused around bioscience. It's a regional effort. We're working with all the school districts, with the JTED district, to create this really remarkable facility that will train young people not only for advanced degrees at the university, but for the tech jobs that support the industry.
We just had Dr. Michael Block on the show of BASIS School. Do you know Dr. Block?
I do.
And I think you worked with him at the
university. They're doing terrific work with BASIS, but we need to expand that capability, and this is a public education school opportunity to train young people for careers in the life sciences.
Bruce Wright has been with us. Bruce serves on the board of TRIO. He also heads up the two parks, one the tech park and the new biopark, and he is very optimistic about the future, and he's optimistic about TRIO, and they're moving in the right direction in bringing not only jobs to Tucson, but high-paying jobs and retaining the jobs that are here. We haven't talked about job retention.
Well, job retention is the real key. I mean, that's what we're trying to do, is keep our people here and give them great jobs. So by creating these kinds of industries, we have the ability to keep the best and the brightest here and to keep my kids and grandkids and everybody's children here in the community.
Bruce Wright, great to see you. Have a great afternoon. Congratulations. Thanks, on what you're doing over there at the parks. The Buckmaster Show is brought to you in part by Flowers, Rieger & Associates Certified Public Accountants, 2919 East Broadway, and on the web at flowersrieger.com. That's going to do it for the Buckmaster Show. Hope you enjoyed it. Tomorrow, we will have a newsmaker interview at 12 noon with State Senator Frank Antonori. Then our Friday Reporters Roundtable on the air. I'm Bill Buckmaster. Have a great afternoon.
KVOI, Cortero, Tucson. 930 KAPR, Douglas. And 1240 KJAA Globe, the Voice Radio Network.